Ian, Quinn, and Colin decided after we visited the Kansas State Fair last year that we should raise ducks. We live out in the country and have a large prairie field and a pond where turtles, snakes, and frogs, and fish live. There's also a muskrat that lives there, but I've only caught a glimpse. Unlike the turtles, who are always sunning themselves on branches that reach out over the water from above. So raising ducks was a possibility. We decided to see if the boys' passion for that possibility lasted until spring. But I told them that if we did get ducks, they would be free-range ducks, not house ducks. Stephanie told them that if we got ducks, we wouldn't eat them. No one had suggested otherwise, but she nevertheless wanted that ground rule established. This is particularly important for Colin, since he watches Man vs. Wild and has been out snake hunting so he can find out what snake meat really tastes like. A booth at the state fair offered deep-fried alligator, but no snake meat. Perhaps someday you'll have the pleasure of meeting my boys. Actually, I should say, perhaps someday they will have the pleasure of meeting you. I, being their father, am of course of the view that meeting them is a pleasure. But it's fully understandable that others might use a word other than pleasure to describe the experience, particularly if invited to go snake hunting. For me, getting ducks will not be an entirely new experience. Instead, it will be a visit to my childhood home with my own children. When I was young, we had a duck, and the story of that animal was to shape my life. To hear it, though, you must forget everything you know about ducks. Not everything, actually. It's a good idea, and rather essential to the story, to remember that they have bills and three-toed feet, and that they, in the wild, fly. But if your thoughts of ducks bring a mental picture of a placid pond and a bird gliding across as if by a force invisible, or a meal at a family-style Chinese restaurant that tastes a little gamey, those thoughts you should forget. I always must remember that not everyone shares my upbringing, and that a little background provides the context that makes something that sounds like life viewed through a funhouse mirror a little easier to understand. My parents were city folks. They got married in 1962 and decided to live life unconventionally. We lived on a dry hill in a 40-acre Michigan bog at the time of our story. My parents were building a house around us as they were motivated, using materials that they could haul in the 1958 Jeep station wagon that used to catch on fire, which is another story, or a series of them. This was during the time that we had rabbits, ponies, horses, and a steer, but before the sheep and the goats that would come later and provide for other tales. My parents decided that we needed to raise some chickens to have a source of eggs for breakfast without having to go to the corner store. The local hardware had a special, as I recall, that required you to buy 50 chicks at a time. They were unsexed, which is supposed to mean that it was a random selection with no advanced determination of the number of males and the number of females in the group. As I think about that now, I realize that that meant that my parents were planning that we would have 25 laying hens. That each hen lays one egg a day. If the chicks had truly been unsexed, my diet would have been much different than it turned out to be. In truth, the reason for the sale was that the female chicks had already been picked through, and it was hard to sell a group of 50 someday roosters. It turned out to be a group of only 47 roosters and 4 hens. When I was a boy, a small boy this time, I grew up terrified of chickens. One of my earliest memories is of the roosters chasing and pecking me, drawing blood more than once. One of my happier early memories is the day that their heads came off and we got to play with their severed feet. With a pair of pliers, you can pull on the tendons and use them like a robot hand. So far, I realize this has little to do with ducks. I pause to assure you that I've not forgotten the point, but I hope you have in your mind a picture of a small boy learning early that being chased by 46 roosters is a nightmarish fate. The problem with chicken feet as toys is that they go bad, although they do remain pliable for more days than you might think. My dream toy was not a chicken foot. Instead, I had seen in the back section of the Sears catalog a picture of an airplane powered by a tiny gas engine and controlled remotely by two strings. This was my dream toy. However, it was expensive at, I think, $13, and I did not have $13. But you must keep in mind that the seed of remote control was firmly planted in my contemplations. Chickens were not the only poultry the hardware store sold. A year or so later, they had a sale on ducklings. If you bought a 50-pound bag of duck food, they would give you 2 free ducklings to feed it to. Since we otherwise had no use for duck food, this seemed like a good bargain to my parents, I think. One of the things I forgot to tell you not to forget about ducks, and that I ask you to remember now, if you were otherwise faithful in your forgetting duties, is that ducks learn by imprinting. This means that behaviors that we associate with duckiness are learned from parent ducks and not instinctive. We did not have parent ducks. We did not have adults, but we did have an adult dog. The ducklings took to her immediately. They followed her everywhere she'd go. This can be a challenge to ducklings, as they have much shorter legs than a dog and only 2 of them. Nevertheless, the dog would go and the ducks would waddle behind. She would trot down the path and they would waddle as fast as they could, sometimes falling on their bills, but getting up again and rededicating themselves to the task. They developed large calluses on their feet and torn webbing from running through the briars. When the dog would go into the horse pen and bark at the horses, the ducks would follow along, quacking at the horse's heels. But one of the ducks was killed by a horse while trying to herd them. The other suffered a broken wing and lost all possibility of a normal duck life. Now alone except its dog mentor, this duck began eating dog food, swallowing pieces of food whole, and sleeping in the doghouse. The dog was a fairly gentle German shepherd named Princess. The duck, however, learned a lesson from its encounter with the horse's hoof. When you're small, it concluded, you don't have the luxury of Princess's niceness. It's bill or be killed. So he became bitter and mean and a little bit cruel. You may have grown up in a family of peace and tranquility. But we 3 boys, within 3.5 years of each other, lived in a world of shifting alliances, détente, and warfare. I was the youngest, the weakest, and the most easily conquered. It was one of these times, when alliances had turned from Mark and me against Bill to Bill and Mark against me. I ran into the barn as they gave chase. Once there, I realized I was trapped. As they pried the doors open, I daydreamed of having a toy airplane with a gas engine and sending it straight for the gap they were about to squeeze through. I thought, too, about how I wished for an army of roosters to chase them away. Then I saw I was not alone, but that resting in the barn not far from me was the duck. Before he knew what I was doing, I snatched him up. I scampered up the haystack to the high spot looking down at the door. When Bill and Mark broke through, I yelled, "Hey there!" They looked up, and I threw the duck down. With a broken wing, it couldn't fly very far, but it could flap wildly and cushion its fall. It hit Mark and landed irately, quacking, biting, and clawing. Mark and Bill ran as it gave chase. And thus the duck began its career and found its calling as a missile. At least, until the umbrella. When the machine gun was invented in the 1880s, the British considered it an improper form of warfare, and their military commanders rejected it. The Germans had no such reservations and devised a plan, a war that relied on it. It came to be known as the Great War. The machine gun was a fearsome defensive weapon said to be as powerful as 80 riflemen. It was through experiences like that at the Somme that generals learned how the gun made assaults on enemy positions futile. By the end, tens of thousands had marched into the unending onslaught of flying lead, striking down wave after wave of recruits and draftees. We thought the lesson was that a generation of young men was too high a price for leaders of nations to ever again pay. So the Great War was also called the War to End All Wars. By World War II, Truman knew that there was no weapon that by threat alone could end the bloody carnage we unleash on each other, so he did not threaten. He made a demonstration of the atomic bomb, and as if to reinforce that there was no limit to the willingness of man to employ the most terrible of forces, he sent another. It was not just the idea that the bomb might be used a third time that brought Japan to surrender. It was the practical inability to defend against it. And it was that inability that kept the world a peaceable place when I was a kid. We lived with the knowledge that there was nothing that could stop the eradication of all that surrounded us. Nothing, that is, but the threat of the same fate for our enemies. And this was my hope for the duck. By unleashing it, I believed I had made the point that there was no winning a war. Peace, or at least the absence of outright aggression, would be the next epic. I hadn't thought that through very well. The world I lived in was not analogous to one where each side possesses nuclear weapons. It was more like a world in which there is one nuclear weapon with its own mind, and whoever gets to it first can try to use it. Still, though, my dream of world peace may have been misguided, but the duck was a weapon of peace. For days, maybe for weeks, escalating fights were brought to an end by the race for the duck. If I reached it first, Mark's surrender was sure to follow. If Mark did, it was my white flag that would fly. Now, all great political ideas have their roots outside of great politicians. Great politicians just embrace ideas that they find elsewhere and they make them public policy. Ronald Reagan realized that though mutually assured destruction had worked to that point, the risk of nuclear war could be reduced better by removing the fear of attack than it could by increasing the threat to the enemy. This idea that would become the public policy of the Star Wars missile defense system would ultimately win the Cold War. But it didn't come from a great politician. It didn't come from being governor of California. No, I like to think instead that it came from my brother in the boggy Michigan woods. The duck was a mighty weapon. And so it was that I thought one day that I had the better of Mark. The duck was eating its dog food, and our fight, or rather my retreat as he gave chase with a rope with which he would tie me up until discovered by a parent, was moving in that direction, and I was closer to the duck. I thought it strange that Mark gave chase more slowly than he was capable, but rather than look a gift horse in the mouth, I made for the duck as quickly as I could. I expected to see the fear in his eyes when I turned around and aimed it at him. Instead, he stood grinning, leaning against the tree about 10 feet away, holding the rope. "Don't make me," I shouted. "You go ahead," he answered, calmly and defiantly. Holding the duck in two hands, I lifted it above my head to throw it at him. As my arms lunged forward, he reached behind the tree and pulled out something hidden there. It was an umbrella, and he snapped it open just as I released the bird. He held it straight out in front of him. The duck hit the cloth covering bill first and bounced off, falling to the ground, a little dazed. Then I knew my weapon was obsolete, and I'd never win another battle. The era of the duck was at an end. Like Gorbachev some years later, I knew the war was finished.